Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Thursday, May 14th, 2020. I'm your reader, Leanne Bakerose. Cerro Gordo's daily COVID-19 update for Thursday, May 14th. Data snapshot. 13,675 total lab-confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Iowa. 15 total lab-confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Cerro Gordo. Ages of lab-confirmed cases. 18 to 40, 3 cases. 41 to 60, 6 cases. 61 to 80, 6 cases. 318 deaths in Iowa, 0 deaths in Cerro Gordo. 2,330 COVID-19 tests administered at the mobile testing unit. A status report of monitoring and testing of COVID-19 in Iowa is available by the Iowa Department of Public Health at coronavirus.iowa.gov. For Cerro Gordo County data, visit cghealth.com. Tattoo guidance for studios during COVID-19. Starting tomorrow, barbershops, tattoo establishments, salons, and massage therapists are allowed to reopen. In response to this announcement, the Iowa Department of Public Health, or IDPH, created reopening guidance for tattoo establishments with restrictions. Please consult the Cerro Gordo Public Health at 641-421-9300 with questions about how to implement this guidance. In addition to following all directives of the governor as outlined in proclamations, entities considering reopening are strongly encouraged to adhere to the public health guidance. The document can be found on the IDPH Novel Coronavirus website. Testing process. As many of us have heard, testing is very important because it provides data that helps us identify, track, and contain the virus in our community. We would like to address some concerns and questions the public has about the testing process. Testing is like getting a test for the flu. Health providers use the same supplies as for flu to collect a specimen, that is, a nasal swab that gets put in liquid for viruses. Then it is sent off to an approved lab for testing. It is important to note that receiving the test may feel uncomfortable, but knowing if you're positive or not will help protect those around you. It is critical that individuals who are experiencing symptoms call the Mercy One Family Health Line at 641-428-7777. Positive and negative test results are communicated back to healthcare providers and IDPH. This is a mandatory order that is the same as for other reportable diseases. City of Clear Lake updates. Yesterday, City Administrator Scott Flory provided some updates on the status of the reopening for some businesses in Clear Lake. Below is a summary of those announcements. Fire and EMS have plenty of supplies. Call volume is down 25%. Clear Lake Library is incrementally opening starting May 18th. For now, the hours will be limited to Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. They are asking people to please wear a mask and practice social distancing while in the library. The book drop is open. If you have questions, please call the library at 641-357-6133. And for more information, visit clllibrary.org. Restrooms on the main street are reopened. Playground, bandshell rooms, shelters, and water fountains remain closed. City Hall hopes to be opened within a couple of weeks. They are considering public health and safety measures to install to protect staff and the public as they reopen. The City of Clear Lake is waiting for more information from the governor's proclamation that ends May 27th to announce their plans on the Clear Lake pool. Virus review. CDC releases new reopening guidance. Oil manufacturing had best luck with PPP loans. U.S. health officials on Thursday released some of their long-delayed guidance that schools, businesses, and other organizations can use as states reopen from coronavirus shutdowns. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention posted 6 one-page decision tool documents that use traffic signs and other graphics to tell organizations what they should consider before reopening. The tools are for schools, workplaces, camps, childcare centers, mass transit systems, and bars and restaurants. The CDC originally also authored a document for churches and other religious facilities, but that wasn't posted Thursday. The agency declined to say why. In other news, almost 75% of small businesses applied for help from a United States loan program designed to keep workers employed during the coronavirus pandemic, but only 38% of small businesses received any money, according to results from a U.S. Census Bureau survey released Thursday. Oil extraction and mining businesses had the best success in getting loans from the Federal Paycheck Protection Program, with more than half of businesses surveyed in that sector reporting getting some help, according to the survey. Just under half of small businesses in manufacturing and about 45% of small businesses in accommodations and food services reported receiving loans, the survey found. In other developments, whistleblower Dr. Rick Bright warned the U.S. lacks a plan to produce and fairly distribute a coronavirus vaccine when it becomes available. Bright told a congressional panel the nation could face the darkest winter in modern history unless leaders act decisively. Bright alleges he was ousted from a high-level scientific post after warning the Trump administration to prepare for the pandemic. Republican Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina stepped aside as chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee after the FBI served a search warrant for his phone as part of an insider trading investigation tied to the coronavirus pandemic. The Justice Department is investigating whether Burr broke the law with a well-timed sale of stocks before the coronavirus caused markets to plummet. President Donald Trump said Thursday that he intends to prepare the country for future pandemics by restocking the national stockpile and bringing critical manufacturing back to the U.S. Worries about having enough to eat are adding to the anxiety of millions of people across the United States, according to the COVID Impact Survey. It found 37% of unemployed Americans ran out of food in the past month, and 46% were worried about running out. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf is struggling against a Republican revolt over his stay-at-home orders and business shutdowns. Counties that have been egged on by state GOP lawmakers have threatened to defy his orders, forcing the Democratic governor to decide how far to go in enforcing them. It will be a summer in the South for NASCAR. The Stock Car Series announced Thursday it will stick to Tennessee, Georgia, Virginia, Florida, and Alabama for June races, all of them without fans. NASCAR has now set plans for 20 races, including 9 in the Elite Cup Series, as it returns to the tracks after being shut down for more than 2 months by concerns about the coronavirus. Jobless benefits paid Iowans top $800 million. Iowa workers idled by the coronavirus economic shutdown have collected more than $800 million in unemployment benefits since the pandemic hit the state in March, according to Iowa workforce development data. The federal government has paid $547.3 million in jobless benefits, and the state has paid nearly $293.2 million. The surge in job losses brought on by mandated business and school closings, however, has begun to subside as restrictions are lifted and more retail establishments reopen. Even so, unemployment benefits paid to jobless workers remain high, with 16,735 claims filed during the week that ended Saturday, according to an Iowa Workforce Development report released Thursday. That total is down from the 24,693 filed the previous week and well below the weekly peak of 64,194 in April. Workforce officials said Thursday the past week's claims included 15,411 from individuals who work and live in Iowa and 1,324 claims by individuals who work in Iowa and live in another state. The number of continuing weekly unemployment claims was 191,257. Unemployment benefits totaled $52.9 million for the same week, bringing the total paid since the week of March 15th through the 21st to nearly $293.2 million, state officials reported. Industries hit hardest with jobless claims in the past week were manufacturing, 4,065, self-employed, independent contractors and other non-specified categories, 2,103, healthcare and social assistance, 1,865, accommodation and food services, 1,269, and retail trade, 1,133. more than $108.2 million in federal pandemic unemployment compensation benefits was paid the past week. Since April 4th, the federal government has paid $547,345,200 in jobless benefits in Iowa. More than $7 million was paid to 13,075 Iowans receiving pandemic unemployment assistant benefits in the week ending May 2nd. Officials with the U.S. Labor Department reported Thursday that nearly 3 million Americans filed claims for state and federal jobless benefits last week, pushing the number of benefit seekers to about 36.5 million over the past 2 months. The April unemployment rate nationally was 14.7%, while the latest Iowa jobless rate reported for March was 3.7%, but state officials expected that to be higher when a new report comes out later this month. Beginning Friday, restaurants, hair salons, barbershops, and other on-premise businesses closed for about 2 months in Iowa's 22 counties hardest hit by the COVID-19 outbreak will begin to reopen, with restrictions similar to what the rest of the state has been experiencing since May 1st. Governor Kim Reynolds and State Department of Public Health officials announced Wednesday that positive COVID-19 test results have stabilized enough that Iowans can move into the recovery phase of reopening the economy, but under strict compliance with social distancing and sanitary guidelines. Bars, casinos, indoor theaters, and other businesses must remain closed until at least May 27th, the governor said. For more information on the data for this week's unemployment claims, visit iowalmi.gov/unemployment-insurance-statistics. Eddie Mauro defends negative poll questions about challengers for Iowa U.S. Senate seat. Candidates in the race for the Iowa Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate are jockeying for poll position. Now, Des Moines businessman Eddie Mauro has a poll that includes negative questions about his Democratic opponents, showing that in a general election contest, he's tied with Senator Joni Ernst 42% to 42%. That poll, conducted by Rabba Research, whose founders include a strategist for the Ernst campaign and President Barack Obama's Iowa campaign director, asked likely general election voters about the vulnerabilities of the other Democrats in the June 2nd primary election. Specifically, the pollster asked about Teresa Greenfield's U.S. House bid in 2018. She failed to get on the ballot because her campaign manager was charged with felony election misconduct. Voters also were asked whether general election voters might have a problem supporting Michael Franken, who has voted in Iowa only twice in 30 years and has a million-dollar home in Virginia. In both cases, more than half of those polled said that information gave them doubts. In Greenfield's case, 44% had serious doubts and 23% had some doubts. On the question of Franken's residency, the results were 68% serious and 10% some doubts. The Greenfield campaign, which has accused Mauro of running a false negative smear campaign, and the Franken campaign, criticized Mauro's negative strategy when Democrats are uniting to defeat Ernst, whom they see as vulnerable this year. Ernst's favorables have fallen to 47%, and Cook Political Report recently downgraded the race from likely Republican to leans Republican. The Mauro campaign defended the questions as valid because Democrats cannot pretend that the Ernst campaign does not already recognize these negatives, according to spokesman Keegan Brown. The National Republican Senatorial Committee has produced a video on those topics. The point of a primary is to vet candidates and make sure they can go toe-to-toe with their challenger in the general, Brown said. If the negatives are too much of a problem in the primary, they will certainly be the death knell to any campaign in the general. Just because Greenfield was handpicked by Schumer does not mean she is the anointed candidate, he said, referring to the Des Moines real estate executive who is being backed by U.S. Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer of New York. Franken, who grew up in northwest Iowa and retired as a three-star admiral after 37 years in the Navy, is running an issues-based campaign on health care, lowering prescription drug costs, and taking on special interests, spokesman Aaron Slutkin said. That's why he's Iowa's Democrats' best candidate to defeat Joni Ernst and help flip the Senate in November, he said, adding that attacks on Mike's 4 decades of military service won't have an impact. Greenfield spokesman Sam Newton also predicted the Morrow attacks would not sit well with Democratic voters. It's disappointing that another candidate would choose to continue doing GOP Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's dirty work and spreading false smears will only backfire, he said. Iowans know Teresa Greenfield is the strongest candidate to take on Senator Ernst. Newton pointed to a poll released earlier this week showing Greenfield leading the primary election field with 43% of the vote to 12% for Franken and 4% each for Morrow and Kimberly Graham. Although early voting has been underway since late April, 36% said they were unsure who they would support. A fifth candidate, Cal Woods, will appear on the ballot but has dropped out and endorsed Franken. The primary election poll by Public Policy Polling was commissioned by a group supporting a universal basic income. It polled 849 people May 5th and 6th. Morrow's poll of 632 Democrats, Republicans, and no-party voters was in the field May 7th through the 9th. Voters were contacted by landline and cell phone. Kirsten Lukeman, nursing fulfilled my love of helping people. Like many professionals, Kirsten Lukeman changed fields after spending years in a job that wasn't satisfying. The Clear Lake resident is happy she made the decision to go back to school to become a nurse more than 13 years ago after going to Drake University for a bachelor's degree and working a long career in information technology. It was a move based on heart, emotion, and wanting to serve. I didn't have that personal feel of helping others in my first career, Lupkeman said. Nursing fulfilled my love of helping people. I'm able to serve and help people, and that is so fulfilling. When Lupkeman decided to switch fields, she attended Des Moines Area Community College and earned her associate degree. In 2007, she received her LPN license, and a year later, she received her RN license. After plying her trade in Alexander and Ames, she has found her home at Country Meadow Place in Mason City, where she is a healthcare coordinator. In those 9 months, Lupkeman has made a name for herself at Country Meadow Place, a dedicated Alzheimer's and memory care community, as a hard worker and someone residents enjoy working with. It's that love for the second career she chose and her devotion to the residents at Country Meadow Place that has made her one of the most well-respected nurses in North Iowa. Because of that, she was selected as one of the Globe Gazette's top 10 outstanding nurses. It's flattering because I'm a private person, Lupkeman said. I don't do this for the recognition. None of us do. It was a real shock when I found out, but I am honored. As a healthcare coordinator, Lupkeman helps residents with memory care needs. She helps them with their doctor appointments and their medicine needs and is a liaison between the patient and family. I do a little bit of everything to make sure all residents' needs are being met, she said. I have contact with family members to keep them current with their loved ones. It's rewarding for me when families know residents are well taken care of. I like knowing they are being taken care of. Working with residents with memory care needs can be both challenging and rewarding, Lupkeman said. It is also emotionally draining at times. It is a tough and rewarding job, both physically and emotionally, she said. You can't help but be emotionally connected to the residents you help each day. It is a loss when we lose a resident. It's such a loss when they leave. Sometimes you have to contain your emotions. Many times when we go home, we let them out. Lupkeman said the onset of the COVID-19 virus has changed everything at Country Meadow Place. An already tough job has been made more difficult because contact in the healthcare field is vital. The healthcare coordinator says she has had to redouble her efforts to avoid contact outside of the workplace and definitely has to follow all of the processes that have been put in place at the facility since the pandemic started. It has definitely made it tougher, she said. If I thought I was striving to keep the residents healthy then, I'm doing so much more now. We all are providing an extra level of care, and that can be both physically and emotionally draining. But no matter the situation and the challenges facing Lupkeman, the Clear Lake nurse said she is happy she made the career switch and is proud to be a nurse. She believes nursing provides vital care in the community and serving brings many rewards. I love what I do on a daily basis, and I have great respect for everybody here and the work they do for providing care for our residents, Lupkeman said. I'm proud of our staff for the care they provide. I've seen everybody step up during this crisis. Lupkeman's work in the healthcare field doesn't end there. Her love of nursing has led her to North Iowa Area Community College, where she is a traveling certified nurse's aide instructor. Nursing is my passion, so I go to Hampton to teach it in the high school, she said. I love it. Clear Lake 4th of July celebrations, Mason City Playground reopenings, both wait and see for now. As the COVID-19 pandemic has now stretched into its second full month in Iowa, many local governments are in a holding pattern with their summer plans. Repeatedly throughout the latest Cerro Gordo County Public Health press conference, government officials said that they didn't have specific timeframes for reopening certain facilities and were left monitoring Governor Kim Reynolds' guidelines and proclamations. Clear Lake City Administrator Scott Flory relayed that there's no firm date for reopening the city's beaches. Mason City Mayor Bill Schickel let residents know there's no precise target to bring back the town's playgrounds and park shelters. And Cerro Gordo County Public Health Director Brian Hanft shared that there isn't a hard cap on when Mercy One North Iowa will stop doing mobile testing at the North Iowa Fairgrounds. Throughout the meeting, wait and see was the MO. Perhaps one of the larger events that officials in the county are waiting on is Clear Lake's annual 4th of July celebrations. According to Flory, the city has a small but very representative group that we've been working with weekly and talking about the logistics of all of that. He said that they're not ready to make a decision, but that when one does come, it will be in concert with community partners and that public health will be the top priority. The same, too, goes for Mason City's own celebrations. For both Clear Lake and Mason City, there isn't a sense yet when their city halls will be back open for business, but Mason City Administrator Aaron Burnett and Flory have each said that officials are taking steps to safely reopen to the public. But there are more things reopening, or at least they're now able to reopen. With Governor Reynolds' most recent proclamations, area salons and barbershops can now come back. And even though such businesses aren't monitored by public health in the same way that restaurants are, Hanf said his department is still working with them to reduce as many risks as possible. As of now, it's been more than a month since Cerro Gordo County has had a new case, but Hanf and others stressed that that doesn't mean area residents should let off the gas when it comes to precautions. 13 more Cerro Gordo businesses receive state bailout money. Since the Iowa Economic Development Authority, or IEDA, began issuing grants to small businesses in the state that have been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic, 43 Cerro Gordo County-based businesses have received funding through late April. Since then, 13 more businesses have joined them and received a total of $260,553 from the IEDA. Grants range from $5,000 to $25,000, in addition to the IEDA offering certain business deferrals and waivers. How much a business gets is in part determined by how dramatically its revenue has been impacted by the pandemic. 5 Cerro Gordo County businesses received the full $25,000 from the IEDA in these newer rounds of funding, while one got $24,000 and 3 others were given $20,000. No business in these rounds got the minimum. Here are the latest businesses receiving grant money. Awa's Restaurant, Inc., $20,000, formerly known as Pro's Sandwich Shop, also granted money through the local Small Business Recovery and Continuity Fund. Clear Lake Optics Corp., doing business as Dr. Corthals and Associates, $25,000. Control Print Creative Corporation, $25,000. Cutting Edge Fitness, Inc., $20,000, also granted money through the local Small Business Recovery and Continuity Fund. Hair Director Studio, $8,000. K&D Enterprises, LLC, doing business as Market 124, $25,000. LeJames College of Hairstyling, Inc., $20,000. Larson Red Zone Sports, Inc., $14,000, also granted money through the local Small Business Recovery and Continuity Fund. Mormon Clothiers, $25,000. Oasis Tan, $19,533, also granted money through the local Small Business Recovery and Continuity Fund. River City Roller City, LLC, $24,000. Sunset Sharky's Pub and Grub, $10,000. West Inc. doing business as Charlie's Auto Repair, $25,000. Along with state funding, county businesses have also put in for local money through a Small Business Recovery and Continuity Fund overseen by the North Iowa Corridor Economic Development Corporation and funded by the governments of Cerro Gordo County, Clear Lake, and Mason City. When North Iowa Corridor President and CEO Chad Schreck announced the grant awards on Tuesday, a total of $414,495 was dispersed among 119 county businesses to, as Schreck said, provide critical short-term assistance to our small businesses so they can maintain or reopen business operations. The local fund still has funding that it's looking to disperse by the end of the week, while the IEDA money is being dispersed in rounds that have sometimes come every single day and sometimes been every few days. To date, the IEDA has given out $68.8 million to 3,644 businesses. Mason City man in jail on multiple charges after high-speed chase. An 18-year-old Mason City man remains in the Cerro Gordo County Jail on Thursday after police say he took off during a traffic stop and led police on a chase that topped 100 miles per hour. According to a press release from the Cerro Gordo County Sheriff, a Cerro Gordo County Sheriff's deputy pulled over Caleb Adam Malik at the intersection of 10th Street Northwest and North Federal Avenue for several traffic violations. While the officer was at the car, they could see marijuana residue and also smell it, but when the deputy ordered Malik to turn off the car, he took off instead. The pursuit ran through the city onto 12th Street Northwest, where speeds reached over 110 miles per hour. It ended when Malik lost control of his car at the intersection of 275th and Jonquil Avenue and crashed into a ditch, according to the press release. A search of the vehicle yielded an illegally carried AR-15-style rifle. No one was injured in the chase. Malik was charged with misdemeanor eluding, carrying weapons, interfering with police acts, two counts of failure to obey a traffic device, no insurance, and dark windows. Further charges are pending, according to police. Stacy Ostert Miller, hospice nurse meeting challenges head-on. Stacy Ostert Miller is a hugger. As a hospice nurse, hugging is an unwritten requirement of the job for many. These special health care providers focus on relieving or mitigating, without curing, terminally ill patients' pain at the end of their lives. Hospice care prioritizes comfort and quality of life by reducing pain and suffering, and hugging can often be a part of that care. But all of that changed 2 months ago with the COVID-19 pandemic. Ostert Miller is no longer able to hug the patients she cares for, and that has been tough on everybody. "We can't hug, and that is one of the most difficult things," said Ostert Miller, who works at Mercy One Hospice as a traveling caregiver. "We're huggers. Hugging is the best medicine we can have sometimes. COVID-19 has changed our jobs. We can't get into our facilities as much to support our patients, and that is tough on them and us." Ostert Miller says she and her colleagues meet remotely to talk about the challenges of hospice care, especially as it pertains to the current crisis. She says the most difficult thing is nobody really knows how long it will last. "This has been hard for our patients who are already facing challenges," she said. "They didn't sign up for this, and neither did anybody else. We've all had to adjust, but it has been very hard on our patients." Ostert Miller's willingness to take care of her patients, no matter how many challenges she faces, has made her one of the most well-respected nurses in North Iowa. Because of that, she was selected as one of the Globe Gazette's top 10 outstanding nurses. Ostert Miller hasn't always been a nurse. In fact, she has only been a healthcare provider for a decade after earning a management and finance degree early on and working in that field. But she decided to change fields and went back to school to become a nurse. She has worked full-time as an EMT nurse at a hospital and has spent time in the emergency room, obstetrics, and critical care at Mercy One before transitioning to hospice. For the past 2.5 years, Ostert Miller has been on the road caring for 4 to 5 patients a day in their homes, care centers, and hospitals, mainly in the Charles City and Osage areas of Floyd and Mitchell counties. For the Riceville nurse, transitioning to hospice care has been a great move. So many people were inspiring and encouraging, she said. That little voice kept telling me I should do it, and I love what I do. Ostert Miller can't put a finger on what part of her job she likes the most because there are so many, she said. But the fact that she gets to build relationships with her patients is right up there. We're dealing with end-of-life issues, so we get close, she said. It's uncharted territory with some patients. They are letting us come in to help them. Every day is a little different. It's a difficult job, but it is rewarding. It's emotional and physically draining. It has been my favorite nursing job. But with the good comes the bad. Knowing patients are in the last phases of their lives, usually 6 months, getting to know them and building relationships is made more difficult when they pass. That can be said for building relationships with family members as well, she said. Ostert Miller said she is proud of that and believes the patients' families appreciate her and the other hospice nurses that take care of their loved ones each day. We build bonds. Hospice is unique that way, she said. It's more than just taking care of their health care needs. We're trying to make them as comfortable and their lives as meaningful as we can. We strive to give them support, and that means we grieve and care too much sometimes. As for hugging, Ostert Miller looks forward to the day she is able to hug her patients again. She believes it is an integral part of caring for them. Sometimes we just don't have words, she said. It's a difficult job, but it is rewarding. It's emotional and physically draining. It has been my favorite nursing job. You are listening to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Thursday, May 14th, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. At this time, we would traditionally turn to our obituaries, but we have none today, so we'll continue reading the news. How Cerro Gordo County businesses plan to use local COVID-19 relief money. Running a small business at any time is tough. According to Bureau of Labor Statistics, about 80% of small businesses make it through their first year, 70% make it through their second year, 50% to their fifth, 30% to their 10th. Even more so, though, at a time when the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic has forced business shutdowns and made people leery of going outside to frequent their favorite establishments. When Clear Lake businessman Shay Coleman opened up a new gym earlier this year, he couldn't have known that his new venture would quickly be stymied by a global pandemic and that revenue loss would break into the $10,000 range. Coleman said that he wasn't entirely sure if the business would even be able to continue with such disruptions. So being one of the more than 100 Cerro Gordo County businesses to receive money through the local Small Business Recovery and Continuity Fund, overseen by the North Iowa Corridor Economic Development Corporation, was a boon for Coleman. Without that, we were in a world of hurt, he confessed. Though it won't cover all costs, Coleman said the business can put the $5,000 toward rent, utilities, software programs, and payroll, the things that keep the business running. A number of other businesses have said they are putting the money they receive to similar use. Mason City Senior Center Director Vince Lockwood shared that his organization is using its $5,000 grant on monthly expenses and payroll. According to Lockwood, the shutdowns mean that the Mason City Senior Center isn't able to serve its patrons in the same way. He and three other employees are helping get meals to seniors every day, but that's about it. Bingo games and dance days are a no-go. We have over 200 members, and they're not able to come here now, Lockwood said. Once we open up, we'll start up our regular routine again. For area businesses, perhaps none have been hit in quite the same way that the Surf Ballroom and Museum has been. It closed March 17th and has stayed closed ever since. There's no pivoting for the host of the Winter Dance Party and the Wing Ding. They can't do curbside pickup. Even as Governor Kim Reynolds' orders have allowed for restaurants, barbershops, salons, and gyms to reopen, there are no plans yet for music venues. Public gatherings of that scale feel like a pipe dream when containing the spread is still a major priority for local health departments. At the beginning of the week, the Mason City Municipal Band had to cancel its summer dates for similar reasons. With the $5,000 it's getting, the Surf is chipping away at the overhead costs it has, which can hit $10,000 a month. Every little bit helps, they said. When North Iowa Corridor President and CEO Chad Schreck announced the awards on Tuesday afternoon, he said that the grants, which range between $1,000 and $5,000, would provide critical short-term assistance to our small businesses so they can maintain or reopen business operations. A total of 150 businesses completed the final application for the program and requested a total of more than $680,000 in assistance, which was $180,000 more than what had been allotted by the various local governments. With that, the North Iowa Corridor had to consider a number of factors to prioritize applicants, including negative financial impacts on the business, expenses in need, and longevity and impact in the community. Because a business like Coleman's had been so majorly disrupted, it got the full $5,000, which he remains thankful for. In this area, people want us to do well. Six area wrestlers named to Academic All-State. On Thursday, the Predicament Wrestling website released its 2020 Academic All-State team, and six area wrestlers were on the list. Mason City's Cullen Shriver, along with Joe Sullivan of Osage, were named to the first team. The Academic All-State Team 2020 includes Cullen Shriver, Senior, Mason City, Ethan Fulcher, Senior, Hudson, Griffin Little, Junior, Bettendorf, Will Heft, Senior, Iowa City West, Crew Howard, Junior, Clarinda, Drake Ayala, Junior, Fort Dodge, Gage Linehan, Senior, Newton, Joe Sullivan, Senior, Osage, Trevor Anderson, Sophomore, Ankeny, Cale Anthony, Senior, Pleasantville, Ben Monroe, Senior, Ankeny Centennial, Keaton Zyment, Junior, Central DeWitt, Griffin Gammel, Senior, Waukee, Cale Happel, Senior, Lisbon. The second team includes Gabe Christensen, Senior, Southeast Polk, Cody Anderson, Senior, Waukee, Caleb Helgeson, Junior, Johnston, Cade Tenold, Sophomore, Don Bosco, Gilbertville, Carson Tenold, Sophomore, Don Bosco, Gilbertville, Sean Thompson, Sophomore, Logan Magnolia, Blake Lieb, Senior, Sergeant Bluff, Luton, Ben Cuter, Freshman, Iowa City, Cole Whitehead, Junior, Center Point, Urbana, Ryder Downey, Sophomore, Indianola, Derek Anderson, Junior, Hinton, Reese Moore, Sophomore, Forest City, Ryan Plummer, Senior, Linmar, Caleb Rathjen, Junior, Ankeny. Honorable mentions go to Wade Mitchell, Senior, Woodbury Central, Reese Cabin, Senior, Iowa City City, Ben Schmitz, Senior, Kemper Catholic Carroll, Abe Michelle, Senior, Maquoketa, Quincy Happel, Sophomore, Lisbon, Jake Frankson Small, Senior, Lamars, Jace Rhodes, Sophomore, Mason City, Cale Hester, Senior, English Valley, Dylan Miners, Junior, North Polk, Christopher Vanderbrink, Senior, Rock Valley, Talon Myers, Junior, Southwest Valley, Jacob Teresi, Senior, Gilbert, Nicholas Bokenstedt, Junior, North Polk, Ryan Adams, Senior, Osage, Max Mashick, Senior, Louisa Muscatine, Justin Brindley, Senior, Southeast Polk, Jacob Moore, Senior, Denver, Garrett Borman, Senior, Iowa City, Gable Mitchell, Sophomore, Iowa City, Elijah Mitchell, Senior, Decorah, Cale Cox, Junior, Ankeny, Carl Barkema, Sophomore, Hampton Dumont, Caden Koslerich, Senior, Centerville, Aiden Noonan, Junior, Cascade, Adam Aronson, Junior, Union LaPorte City. Anheuser-Busch fulfills commitment to University of Iowa Children's Hospital. Fulfilling its very public promise from September to match any donations unassuming fundraiser Carson King generated for the University of Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital, Anheuser-Busch on March 6th gave $920,112 to the campus's philanthropic arm. That is the exact total amassed in King's Venmo account between September 14th, when he made his impromptu appeal, and September 30th, when he ended the far-reaching campaign that in total generated more than $3 million. Both Bush and Venmo early in the campaign vowed to match King's fundraising total through the end of the month, although the total was under $10,000 when they agreed to make the match. Venmo fulfilled its promise to give the nearly $1 million in October, according to the UI Center for Advancement. The Gazette on February 19th reported Bush had not yet fulfilled its commitment nearly 5 months after the fundraiser ended. Center spokeswoman Dana Larson said that's typical for large gifts. Anyone who generously gives a gift to the university can specify how and when it will be given, she said. In particular, larger gifts are often given over time. 2 weeks after the Gazette's February report, Bush gave the $920,111, according to Larson, wrapping an expensive and nationwide campaign that started with King's jocular sign requesting beer money during ESPN's live coverage of the annual Iowa-Iowa State football game on September 14th. King, a 24-year-old former ISU student living in Altoona, told the Gazette he was surprised when viewers actually responded to his Bush Light Supply Needs Replenished sign with donations, prompting him to rethink his use of the money and announce via social media a recalibrated commitment to give it to the Children's Hospital. That big-hearted redirection captured national and even international attention, with more than 35,000 donors from all 50 states and Puerto Rico making small and large gifts alike to the King campaign and Iowa's most vulnerable population. The campaign experienced a hiccup mid-course when King proactively issued a statement apologizing for old racist social media posts after a reporter with the Des Moines Register asked him about them. Bush, which had planned to produce special edition King cans of Bush Light, announced it was cutting ties with the Iowan, although it vowed to make good on its commitment. To date, the UI Center for Advancement has received about $3 million in donations related to the King campaign. We are very thankful to Anheuser-Busch for their gift, which has been received, Larson said. King worked with hospital officials to identify ways the money would benefit Children's Hospital patients and families. Examples include easing financial pressure on families with a hospitalized child, covering costs for things like lodging, food, gas, pharmacy copays, and other expenses. Supporting child life services that improve the hospital experience for patients and siblings through things like play. Providing the latest technology, including sophisticated monitoring. Enhancing neonatal and pediatric transport services. Affording professional development and education opportunities for nurses and providers, and covering equipment needs ranging from advanced imaging units to bed warmers. King in February announced he started his own Carson King Foundation to continue helping kids and their families while also uniting communities. Only 4,000 have received results under Iowa testing programs. Only 4,000 people have gotten results through Iowa's month-old $26 million coronavirus testing contract, but that will increase rapidly now that the equipment has been validated, Governor Kim Reynolds said Thursday. Reynolds said that the state hygienic lab has determined that the machines purchased for the Test Iowa program are 95% accurate in detecting the virus in samples and 99.7% accurate in determining its absence. The validation will allow Test Iowa to soon process 3,000 tests per day as originally envisioned, Reynolds said. She said it would also allow tests to be processed faster and the state to broaden the criteria of who can qualify for a test. The announcement came as Iowa reported 12 more deaths from the virus and an uptick in hospitalizations. The state reported that 180 of the 318 deaths to date have been residents of long-term care facilities where 3 dozen outbreaks have been confirmed. Iowa signed a no-bid contract with Nomi Health, a Utah startup, 1 month ago to purchase 540,000 testing kits and supplies and 10 machines to process samples. Iowa paid $15 million upfront under the deal, which was similar to one in Utah, and quickly followed by Nebraska. A tip to the governor from homegrown celebrity Ashton Kutcher put the deal in motion. On April 21st, Reynolds announced the Test Iowa program would be able to test 3,000 people per day at mobile sites around the state. Days later, she allowed many businesses in 77 counties to reopen, citing the increased testing capacity the program would bring. She has continued her push to reopen the economy since then. But the testing has gotten off to a rocky start. Several of those tested at the first site in Des Moines on April 25th had to wait more than a week to receive results. Others reported that their results were inconclusive or that their samples were damaged and they had to be retested. Many more say they've simply been unable to get tests, either because their online health assessment said they weren't eligible or appointments have not been available. At the same time, some sites were only seeing a few dozen people in a day. The state has released data showing 402,000 people have completed Test Iowa assessments, which ask for personal contact and medical information. But until Thursday, the state hadn't released the number of those who have gotten tests. Another question mark was the accuracy of the tests, which were marketed by Co-Diagnostics under an emergency federal authorization granted last month. Scientists at the state lab in Coralville took several days to run the machines through a validation process, which they called standard for any new equipment, but created a backlog. Reynolds said Thursday that more than 4,000 people have gotten results through Test Iowa and 300 others have been tested. She said the state will have 8 drive-through test sites in operation by Saturday and would soon open a call center to handle inquiries. For those Iowans who have reached out to tell us that we have fallen short of meeting their expectations, we hear you, Reynolds said. But she said she was proud of how quickly the program has been started and that some of the problems, like spoiled samples, are routine in large-scale testing. She said the state and the lab had a great partnership with Nomi Health and its subcontractors and that they were providing useful data. Officials ID man shot to death in northwestern Iowa home. Authorities have identified a man found shot to death this week in a northwestern Iowa home. Kevin Leroy Juzik, 51, died from gunshot wounds to the abdomen and chest, according to the Plymouth County Sheriff's Office. Juzik's death has been ruled a homicide, the Sioux City Journal reported. Deputies were called to a Merrill home late Monday morning for a report of a domestic dispute, and arriving deputies found Juzik dead inside the home. The sheriff's office said another man in the home, 81-year-old Thomas Jordan Knapp, was arrested and is being held at the county jail as a suspect in the case. So far, Knapp has been charged only with domestic assault. Court documents filed by deputies say Knapp's wife called 911 to report that he was assaulting her and her son with a stick. The criminal complaint said the woman had injuries consistent with being hit with a stick. Deputies said they were also told that Knapp pointed a gun at the woman during the course of the assault. A letter to the editor. Join the Lions Club as we celebrate our centennial. On May 12, 2020, the Mason City Noon Lions Club celebrates the centennial anniversary of our charter. While our celebration has been postponed due to the COVID-19 pandemic, a celebration will be held at a later date to allow the club to celebrate this exciting milestone. The Mason City Noon Lions Club continues to serve the Mason City community in many ways, but most importantly, children age 5 and under are screened for vision problems. Children of this age generally can't report their own vision issues, so our club and other Lions clubs in Iowa partner with Iowa KidSight and the University of Iowa to screen these children to find those that may have a vision issue. We continue to be Knights of the Blind as called to service by Helen Keller in 1925. Our club's history includes our founding president, William Westy Westfall, who served as president of the International Lions Club in 1926, the only Iowan to have served in this capacity. The Mason City Noon Lions Club is one of the first 100 clubs chartered, and worldwide, clubs now number 46,000 plus. Our club meets weekly on Wednesday noon and is open to men and women who wish to serve their local community. While we are not currently meeting due to the pandemic, we encourage people who wish to join to reach out to us on our Facebook page, Mason City Noon Lions Club. Additionally, we want to thank the community for their support of our annual chili fundraiser, which assists our club in service to our community. Plans are underway for our chili tailgate dinner to be held in the fall of 2020. Signed, Dennis Riedel, president of the Mason City Noon Lions Club, on behalf of its membership. A letter to the editor. Enjoy the hunt, but think of conservation, too. It's currently wild turkey season in Iowa, and hunters are seeing signs of a promising hunting season. There are a few weeks left of wild turkey hunting in Iowa, and during this time, it's important to remember to make safe choices while enjoying the great outdoors. The coronavirus outbreak has increased social distancing and has eliminated dozens of entertainment options. Iowans are looking at the outdoors for recreation, and it's a good reminder to be mindful of hunters. Please wear orange when venturing out into the wilderness. It helps hunters so much. As people are encouraged to wear masks, hunters are encouraged to wear reflecting gear in the woods. Hunting and fishing licenses are skyrocketing right now, and the license fees will help provide for conservation projects all Iowans can enjoy. Climate change and destruction of Iowa wildlife has created a downward trend for Iowa hunters. The outbreaks at meatpacking plants have been devastating and have created an increase in hunting. The broken meat supply chain has most Iowans worried, and hunters who are loading their freezers with game are also looking at local meat lockers for stability. Enjoy Iowa's outdoor recreational opportunities and support local meat lockers, but also contact Senator Grassley and make conservation a priority during this difficult time. Signed, Preston Harms, Nashua. Guest columnist Lowell Washburn. Apple Valley goose pair makes residents smile. The wait is over. The hatch is on. Newly emerged broods of baby Canada geese are appearing on wetlands across the state. And although the annual renewal of life should bring joy to all who witness it, perhaps no group has been more thrilled by the sight of newly hatched goslings than the residents of Clear Lake's Apple Valley Assisted Living. The nesting geese first made their appearance at Apple Valley in 2009 when a pair took up residence at a small pond on the facility's west side. Nesting at the water's edge, the pair was successful in producing 5 young. The geese were fortunate on the attempt since marauding raccoons often destroy ground nests. Fortunately, there was an easy fix. To protect future nesting, Al Hancock and I installed a predator-proof over-the-water nest structure during the winter. Returning in the spring of 2010, the geese immediately took to the nest, and the structure has produced goslings every year since. For Apple Valley residents, it was love at first sight. From the time of the adults' noisy arrival at winter's end to when the newly hatched goslings successfully jumped to the water, the goose nest provides a continual and upbeat topic of conversation. But as is the case at all assisted living facilities, this spring has presented Apple Valley tenants with some unprecedented challenges. Sheltering in place, there have been no visits by friends and family, no communal worship services, no outside entertainment. Good news has seemed in short supply. Consequently, it came as no surprise when news of hatching babies was announced last Friday that the event seemed to create even greater excitement than usual. Maybe the endearing sight of those proud parents guiding their brand new brood of fuzzy goslings across the water provided a much-needed symbol of better days ahead. And that does it for today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Thursday, May 14th, 2020. I'm your reader, Leanne Bakerose. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. A decade ago, there were typically 20 earthquakes a year that were large enough to feel in the central and eastern U.S. But in 2015, there were over 1,000 of them. Why? It's mostly because we're pumping more water into the ground. The boom in U.S. oil and gas production over the last decade has brought many more oil wells, which also produce water. Most is naturally occurring in the formation, and some was injected by operators to allow or improve the recovery of oil and gas. In both cases, the water will likely have picked up salt and other minerals from the rock, making it many times saltier than seawater. Operators may re-inject this water to continue to liberate oil and gas. But more often, there's too much to handle. So it's trucked or piped to disposal wells, where it's pumped down into deep saltwater reservoirs. Adding large volumes of wastewater increases the pressure in these rock formations, which can allow natural faults to slip more easily than they normally would, causing earthquakes. To address these quakes, regulators and the petroleum industry are monitoring disposal wells and shutting down those that could cause damaging seismic activity. And they now think that managing wastewater injection more carefully should help. There's still more work to be done, and university research centers, like the Bureau of Economic Geology, are conducting major studies with the aim of minimizing the risk of earthquakes while maintaining the benefits of domestic energy production. For EarthDate, I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.
Some would call 88-year-old Sally Jackson a lucky senior.
A few years ago, a family member offered to move in and care for Sally so that she wouldn't have to leave the comfort of her own home.
But soon after, one of Sally's neighbors, Carol, paid a visit, unannounced.
Something wasn't quite right.
Sally's demeanor and physical appearance had changed.
Luckily, Carol was aware of warning signs that might signal elder abuse.
Such as bruises, poor hygiene,
isolation, depression,
appearing withdrawn or unusually quiet, as if to hide something.
When victimized, elderly people often feel ashamed, confused.
But an alert neighbor helped Sally.
Not all abused seniors are as lucky as Sally Jackson.
McGruff the Crime Dog here. The National Crime Prevention Council wants to help you and your loved ones prevent elder abuse. Know what to look for. Know how to report it to local law enforcement agencies.
To learn more, go to ncpc.org/seniors. That's ncpc.org/seniors. A message from the National Crime Prevention Council and the U.S. Department of Justice.